This BBC podcast is supported by ads outside the UK.
BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Welcome to Lady Swindlers with me, Lucy Worsley, where true crime meets history with a twist. Join me and my all-female team of detectives as we travel back in time to revisit the audacious crimes of women trying to make it in a world made for men. We ask, what do their crimes and the times they lived in tell us about women's lives today? Before we begin, the cases we're going to discuss are covered in previous episodes of Lady Swindlers. So if you've not listened already, there are spoilers ahead. Our Lady Swindlers seem to take the world by surprise every single time.
A woman charged with burglary all by herself?
They never see it coming.
If I'm a married man, it's the first I've heard of it.
They scramble for an explanation.
The judge says, and I quote, "I leave it to you, the jury, to say whether she acted under the control and coercion of her husband."
They can't believe there isn't a man behind it all.
No man with her to instruct her.
They go to ridiculous lengths to try to catch the swindle.
I have had these sounds when the medium's hands and feet were held, when she was suspended in a swing from the ceiling, when she was enclosed in a wire cage.
And in the end, they reach their verdict.
The new woman with a vengeance.
Throughout this Lady Swindler series, our in-house historian Rosalind Crone has been right by my side all the way, and she's here today. Hello, Ros.
Hello, Lucy. I can't believe we've reached the end of the series already.
Much too soon. We have had some wild adventures. We've been on a stakeout. We've been locked in prison cells. We've even visited the terrifying Tower of London. And now we're going to focus on criminal superpowers. Our Lady Swindlers each needed a special power to pull off her crimes. We're talking about a lady burglar, a team of mediums who can talk to the dead, an international art thief, and a Victorian hoaxer. That's someone who spikes men's drinks. We want to explore a big question today. Would the world be a better place if women were in charge? This idea is at the heart of the brilliant novel written by today's guest. The book's called The Power. We are so excited to have the author here, Naomi Alderman. She is also a game designer, a professor of creative writing, and a TV producer, demonstrating quite a few superpowers there. Welcome, Naomi.
It's wonderful to be here.
Naomi, you've recently launched a new Radio 4 and BBC Sound series called Human Intelligence. This is about history's greatest thinkers. Tell us a bit more about it.
Human intelligence is about really how we do our thinking, which I really love as a topic. That question of how do you come up with your best ideas? And we do everybody from Mary Wollstonecraft, one of the great early feminist thinkers, to Ida Pfeiffer, who was the inventor of budget travel.
This is brilliant. Now, what we'd like to do today is to understand how some of our lady swindlers created their own kind of unique swindling superpower and how they used it. Ros and I would like to get your perspective, Naomi, on the question of powerful women. Is this a fruitful area for creative fiction, do you think?
Oh, certainly it's been a fruitful area for me. Women always have certain kinds of power and have always been able to use it in certain ways. We have always lived in systems which have given more power to men than to women. However, there are always things that women have been able to do to use whatever position or power they have. I think we have a weird cultural bias where we tell stories about vulnerable women having horrible things happening to them and evil, nasty men doing terrible things. Both of those things are true to some extent, and both of those things are absolutely false if you take them as a total binary. So, one of the things I love about this show is it's about that question, do women ever do bad things? And the answer is, well, yes, all the time. Mm. If women can only see ourselves as victims, then we never are able to feel powerful. And if we only ever see men as victimizers, then we're not able to recognize the ways in which men can be vulnerable. We have to be able to see the fullness of men and the fullness of women. It's delightful to see women being powerful. I enjoy it. It's also really important to talk about women not always being very nice. And it's fun.
Mm. Now, a swindler is sometimes called a confidence trickster, I suppose. Is that a theme you recognise, Ros?
Yes, by a confidence trickster, we mean a person who is able to gain someone's trust or confidence, then abuse it. And I do think that's an important theme here. Throughout history, but especially in the period that we're looking at, the late 18th century through to the early 20th century, women were much less likely to be convicted of crime than men were. And the stereotype of the fraudster tended to be male. If we add to that contemporary stereotypes of women, that they're more likely to be moral, virtuous, caring or nurturing, and they were the weaker sex, that means that women, of course, became unlikely swindlers. So we don't expect them. And we could see this as a type of power.
You've just described the appeal of Miss Marple, who looks just like a little old lady, but she has a brain the size of a planet. And she subverts everybody's expectations.
As a woman, certainly, it's always interesting, isn't it, to be a bit surprising in terms of how intellectual you are, how capable you are. I think it surprises people that I make video games. It's a bit annoying when I am mistaken for a marketing girl on my own games that I've created. But at the same time, I experience it as giving me a little bit of a superpower, where there are things that I can hear that people wouldn't necessarily otherwise say in front of me if they thought that I was who I actually am. So yes, that's a good little power.
Now, we see again and again in Our Lady Swindlers the ability to surprise people. Take Our Lady Burglar, Minnie Phoebe, who repeatedly broke into people's homes in Shepherd's Bush. She becomes an international media sensation.
A lady burglar. Remarkable story and clever capture.
She catches everybody off guard.
An opal brooch. A silver jam.
A gap of 8 inches is all she needed to get through really small windows.
An umbrella and a fur-lined coat.
Her strength and agility becomes her superpower. Naomi, I'm curious, why did you in your novel The Power decide to give women superpowers?
I grew up a very Orthodox Jew. In many ways, that is a very lovely communal world. There's lots of good stuff going on. It is also a misogynist culture where there were things that I was not supposed to learn. There were places I was not supposed to go. I, as a young woman, was relegated as soon as I'd passed 12. I had to be in the ladies' gallery behind a curtain whilst the men were over there doing the actual things during the service. And it made me want to electrocute people. So, yeah. So it comes from a deep personal fantasy of being able to electrocute people full in the face. And eventually it was all right for me to write that down and sell it.
Now, I think that it is fun to have a superpower, although we shouldn't need them to get ahead in life. What would yours be, Naomi? Would you actually like to electrocute people, or would it be something a bit different?
I would like to be able to electrocute people. That is true. Having said that, my novel is a real thinking through of it up to the point that I go, oh, I think probably if all women could electrocute people, that wouldn't be good in the end. So the other superpower that I dream about, literally, I have dreams all the time in which I can move things with the power of my mind.
Really? That's full on Marvel universe.
Right. In the dream, I would be just going, no, look, let me show you. I'm just going to pull a book out of the shelf using the power of my mind.
Like the Fox sisters, our mediums could actually do.
Right. There you go. Yeah. I don't do it via toe cracking, though.
Brilliant. What would your superpower be, Ros?
At this stage of my life, I would love to be able to click my fingers and have all the household chores done, to be honest, which sounds a bit vanilla, I guess, in this conversation. But I was hoping that technology and AI might develop and help me with that. But
it's amazing, isn't it?
It seems to be that technology and especially AI is taking over the tasks I like to do, like research and writing.
I'm totally not surprised by this, because did you know that the dishwasher was invented in the 19th century and then it didn't really catch on and come into production for 100 years or so? And guess which gender invented it? I think we did.
Does this make you want to electrocute someone full in the face?
Well, I'm worried about this electrification route because we know what happens at the end of your novel.
I know, but we can just enjoy for a moment fantasy.
Now, Minnie the burglar is rightly convicted for her crimes. But I can't help this. I do admire her a little bit. She was doing a job that was normally done by men, and she was doing it really well. What did people think at the time, Roz?
Well, I'd say that people were certainly fascinated by Minnie because the idea of a female burglar just sounded so far-fetched. And as we have seen so often with women from the late 19th and early 20th century who committed crimes and frauds, they were often characterised as new women and really used to highlight the dangers of women's changing roles in society, especially their increasing independence. In this case, the judge called Minnie a woman with a vengeance. And also the editor of newspaper at the time, the Civil and Military Gazette, used the case of Minnie to argue against the recent passing of a woman's bill. Now, that was legislation that gave women a greater role in local government in Ireland.
Oh. It's a really disappointing theme that often one bad woman, she's like the bad apple and she brings the cause of women down in general because people say, well, because of her, the rest of you can't do whatever it is that they want to do.
I think they would have said it anyway, Lucy. I don't think it's hardening attitudes necessarily towards the women's cause for independence. It's just providing more fuel for the fire.
It's always that way, isn't it? Actually, if you're able to use a woman burglar to argue against, let's say, women's education, then you already didn't believe in women's education. You were just looking around for an excuse. And you see the same on the internet today.
Naomi, do you think that we still get more excited than we should have to when women break barriers and do things for the first time?
I always feel very hesitant about celebrating a woman and say, oh, she was the first woman to do X. Because there are so many women who are fascinating, did amazing things, and actually were pioneers. Did you know that the first two software houses in Britain were both founded by women?
No.
No, there you go. In the 50s and the early 60s, programming was thought of as women's work because it was very detail-oriented. It involved typing. Once it became something you could make money at, software development courses stopped allowing women to come on those courses. I think there's a way of belittling women by saying, oh, she was the first woman to do X. Look, there are so many women who can be celebrated without having to qualify it. I am extremely fond of quoting the story of Sophia Jex Blake and the Edinburgh Seven, who were the women who took Edinburgh University to court in the 1850s for the right to take a medical degree. When they were originally admitted to study for a medical degree, the authorities went, oh, yes, fine. And the medical students went, oh, hilarious, hilarious. And then it all got extremely serious when one of those women was awarded a medal for getting the top exam, at which point all of the male medical students suddenly went, no, this is not allowed. So the point is, we can accept women as long as we're saying, oh, she's the first woman to blah, 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 blah. But at the point that you just become the top one, then that's very, very threatening.
Zähneputzen am Morgen ist selbstverständlich. Warum nicht auch Sonnenschutz? 90% der Hautalterung entstehen durch Sonnenlicht. Das Beste, was du also für deine Haut tun kannst? Täglicher UV-Schutz, auch an Tagen mit niedrigem UV-Index. Entdecke jetzt den Testsieger laut Stiftung Warentest. Die Eucerin Oil Control Gelcreme mit Lichtschutzfaktor 50+, macht täglichen Sonnenschutz ganz einfach. Sie ist ultraleicht, zieht schnell ein und mattiert langanhaltend. Mit dem Code SUN20 bekommst du jetzt 20% Rabatt auf alle Eucerin Sun Produkte bei shopapotheke.com. Nur bis zum 31. Juli.
Now, let's introduce another character from the series, the Hocuser, Elizabeth Manning. Her superpower, I suppose, is exploiting men's weaknesses, their desire to have a drink with a woman, and then their pride, which stops them from reporting her when she spikes their drinks and robs them. Who wants to admit that they've been made a fool of, let alone by a woman? And when she gets caught, she turns the tables and plays the victim.
I took him home. And he said he had no money. And I told him I have a very heavy rent to pay. And I can't have gentlemen there for nothing.
Naomi, we generally think of spiking drinks as a crime usually committed by men to take advantage of women. What do you think about this? Is her superpower turning the tables?
I think it's such an important story to tell. Genuinely, as I'm listening to that, I'm going, I don't think I've ever heard before a story of a woman in any context roofing a man. And yet, apparently, it's been going on since Victorian England. What she's doing there is exactly what men who roofie and then sexually assault do, which is taking advantage of shame. We talk about how women have shame weaponized against them. What were you wearing? You should have been more careful. All of these stories about what women are supposed to do, what it means to be a good girl, are weaponized against women to stop us from talking about the things that happen to us. Before you told me this story, I would have said, that's a story about what men do to women. And the answer is no, that's a story about what exploitative people do to people who can be shamed and humiliated into not saying what's happened to them. And that shame and humiliation cuts all sorts of different directions. I'm delighted to be introduced to this story. I'll be quoting it for years, I expect.
Let's move on now to our mediums, sisters Maggie and Kate Fox, who have more of a traditional superpower, I'd say. The rest of us really have no chance at all of doing what they did, communicating with the dead.
Now do this just as I do. Count one, two, three, four.
They sparked off the spiritualist movement in 19th century America. Roz, can you tell us briefly what spiritualism's all about?
Yes, spiritualism was the idea that it was possible to communicate with the dead through a medium who received messages. So it was breaking down the idea that there existed this impenetrable barrier between the living and the dead, and it raised this possibility of death without dying. And the movement began with the Fox sisters in America in 1848, and then it spread, including to Britain, when in the early 1850s, some of the American spiritualists or mediums arrived and began to offer their services. And it really became attractive to people of all classes.
Now, the swindle practiced by the Fox sisters, the mediums, wasn't really talking to spirits. It was getting everyone else to believe that they were doing it. Two girls created something like a new religion in the form of the spiritualist movement and became the centre of attention wherever they went. And they were aged just 14 and 12.
I think the thing that's fantastic about this story is women actually have always been able to use religion as a way to gain certain kinds of power. You can look through history and see women understanding that, possibly in a cynical way, which I think these sisters were doing, understanding that if you claim to be able to be in touch with mysterious powers, then nobody can tell you that you're not.
Yes, in the 19th century, women were considered more naturally religious because they're more naturally moral than men, which is very interesting when you consider what they were and were not allowed to do within the church. But they were meant to be the moral guardians of society and bring children up in the right way. Of course, it had a dark side.
What you've just said is something that I experienced growing up. In the Orthodox Jewish world, there's a thought of, oh, women are on a higher madrega, which means a higher spiritual plane. And therefore, women don't have to, which then means must not participate in certain kinds of activities. But it also does give you a certain power as a woman, where your words can carry great weight because there's that idea that you are very connected to God. But of course, it's also a means of control. It's both at the same time. I think I might be developing a theory that all sources of power are also means of control.
Spiritualism took on a life of its own, but Maggie and Kate Fox ended up in pretty sad circumstances, with alcohol addiction and loneliness marking their later years. Maybe their superpower had an expiration date. It is noticeable that women lose the ability to hold people's attention as they get older. Why do you think that society is so ageist towards women, Naomi?
I think society is very youth-obsessed. We tend to give a huge amount of attention to beautiful young women in particular. I'm not sure that attention is always amazing. So there's a lot of films right now in Hollywood which are about women confronting the problems of getting older. And something that irritates me about some of these films is that they seem to suggest that women didn't know that aging was going to happen, and it comes as a tremendous surprise to us. Whereas I think it does not come as a surprise to us. If you've got any brains in your head, you've gone, oh, I'm not going to be able to rely on being an extremely beautiful young girl forever. Now, my experience is I was a young fat woman, then I was a fat woman in my 20s, then I was a fat woman in my 30s, and now I've just turned 50. I never received that sort of, oh, let's give you lots of lovely things because you're an attractive young woman of the type that we want to give lovely things to. And so I've just dedicated my life to trying to be very clever and interesting and nice. And I think those are probably better. And I look at women who have experienced that and then see it fading from them and I go, that seems rough to have to go through that transition. I suppose I would advise young women not to take it seriously. I would say, you know, enjoy it while you get it, but don't think that it's a particularly lovely thing that you're receiving.
Once her power of attracting attention was declining, Maggie Fox made a belated attempt to get some of it back.
Spiritualism is a humbug from beginning to end. It is the greatest humbug of the century.
Maggie Fox was in her 50s at the time, and even her confession didn't allow her to regain control of the narrative in the way she'd perhaps hoped. And we know that because later on she retracted it. Naomi, if you were writing the next chapter for our medium sisters in midlife, what would you have them do? Claw back the old magic?
Oh, I'd love one of them to go and become a debunker, walking into other mediums and going, I know exactly how you're doing that, actually. Let me demonstrate to everyone how you have done this. I think that is a great way. Poacher turned gamekeeper. There's a good novel in there.
I'm revealing my total middle-class values, which is that I wish they'd invested their money along the way and then they'd just go and live a nice, quiet life with a lovely garden.
I think this is very sensible advice and also sensible advice to give listeners to this programme, some of whom may be young women. Invest your money wisely. If you receive lots of money as a young woman for the various privileges you receive, please invest
it
sensibly.
Get a pension. Now, I've saved this swindler for last because, honestly, I can't quite work out what her superpower was. Our art thief, Amélie Découpère, is a French woman with a very French-sounding and quite possibly made-up name. We don't have a picture of her. We've actually never heard her voice. Doesn't survive in the written record. But here's what we do know. She was a con artist who, with her husband, would rent lodgings and then they would run away with the fixtures and fittings. She stole a valuable painting in Amsterdam and was on the run from the police when she came to the UK. Did I miss anything, Ross?
Well, her penal records tell us that she could read and write, which might have meant she could read and write in French, but I think it could have actually meant English. And that would mean that she was bilingual, which is quite impressive. Also, she had guts and brains. The theft of that famous painting from the Amsterdam Museum and trying to sell it on to a dealer on the Strand with her husband wasn't just audacious. It was pretty clever too, because there was no extradition treaty between Britain and the Netherlands, so they couldn't be sent back.
Naomi, if Amélie were a character in a novel that you were writing, what would her superpower be?
Sounds like her superpower is cleverness, which is my favourite superpower. I love that we don't really know who she was. It strikes me that even this story about where she comes from was probably not real. I'm surprised nobody has done a film about her already. She sounds ripe for a movie to me. A movie about art thief going from place to place. Can we do Ocean's One? which is the early history, some ancient ancestor of the Ocean family.
She is surprising, isn't she? Because you didn't think of Victorian women as being that enterprising, doing these things.
There are obviously very modern, ahistorical adventure stories. We just don't tell them except for here. Well done.
Fabulous. Now, the only reason, ultimately, that we know about these swindlers is that they got caught. Their superpowers failed them. The spell was broken. Is that right, Ross?
Yeah, I think their stories potentially tell us about many other women who probably did similar things, similar swindles, and who weren't caught because their activities were overlooked, simply because they were women. On the flip side, I think there is a problem in assigning a superhero status to these women and female criminals in general. Romanticizing crime, it's something that we've done for hundreds of years. And crime does do harm to individuals and society. And there's also a problem seeing female criminals as feminist rebels, because we're almost ascribing them retrospectively a power that they did not possess. And that's to fundamentally misunderstand the society in which they were operating.
I think it's amazing to hear about a woman drugging a man to steal things from him. It's amazing because I haven't heard it before. Let's not lose sight of the fact that that is a really bad crime, to take somebody's autonomy away from them in that way. I think to enjoy the way in which the stories are different to stories that we've heard before is to enjoy the complexity of history. But yes, I do agree that we're having fun talking about them as superheroes or having superpowers. And actually, what they were is people living in a complicated world.
Naomi, some early feminist thinkers thought that in an ideal society, absolute power would be held by women. But in your series, Human Intelligence, one of the figures you feature is Mary Wollstonecraft, who argued not for female dominance, but for equality. Which side of the debate do you find more compelling?
I don't think that putting one group in charge of another group has ever led anywhere good. The more equality we have, the better. I don't think women are better than men. I don't think men are better than women. I don't think women have some special skill with children that means that we have to only look after children. I don't think men have some special skill with money that means they have to be in charge of all the money. I think we all need to be able to function with all areas of human life, and that the world would be better if we were all equal in all of these areas.
But given the men have been in charge for so long and created the world in their own image, don't we deserve some extra time, extra credit, extra skills, extra resources to catch up? What do you think, Voss?
No, because we assume that they will bring to the table female qualities and characteristics, that we suddenly adopt almost a Victorian frame of thinking, that they are going to be more caring than men and nurturing, that they are going to be more moral in how they spend that money, which I think is interesting. We revert back into those very gendered, stereotypical ways of thinking, which I think is terribly dangerous. We don't know what equality looks like because we've never had equality. I'm not sure if we'll ever achieve it, but it should always be what we are aiming for.
Naomi, to wrap things up now, what do you actually take away from these women's stories?
I mean, what I personally take away is a lot of inspiration for future things I want to write.
Oh, brilliant. If there's one thing I've learned from our lady swindlers today, it's that their superpowers were very different. They each employed their gifts at a specific moment in time and in a specific way. And that seems to me to be an important thing about power. It doesn't look the same for everybody. And not everyone realizes the power they have. There have been some dark deeds in this episode, which we don't advise you to emulate at home. But maybe we can be inspired to look in unexpected corners of our own selves, to find superpowers of our very own. Well, a huge thank you to Naomi Alderman and Professor Rosalind Crone. Lady Swindlers with Lucy Worsley is produced by Reham Musa, and the readers are Claire Corbett, Lauren Lefko, Jonathan Keeble and Alex Phelps. The historical consultant is Rosalind Crone. The commissioning editor for BBC Radio 4 is Rhianne Roberts, and the executive producer is Kirsty Hunter. It's a Story Hunter production for BBC Radio 4. And you can catch up with the whole series if you search for Lady Swindlers on BBC Sounds. As we've reached the end of Season 5, we would like to thank our entire series team, including researcher Sophie Michelle, production manager Claire Myers, sound designer, editor and mixer Chris McLean. And that's where we'll leave you for now. Thank you for listening and see you next time.
We pulled into what felt like an old compound. You think, wow, this is a very old property.
I'm Danny Robbins and Uncanny is back. We have three brand new summer special episodes and things are about to get scary.
I could feel something moving up the side of the bed and I can't quite believe what I'm seeing.
A trip to a tiny medieval town in central Spain turns into a holiday from hell.
I could make out its long, matted fur and I am absolutely petrified. Absolutely petrified. This was just pure terror.
And we'll investigate more spine-chilling cases in an episode recorded live at the Hay Festival.
Uncanny Hay audience, who is feeling team believer and who is team skeptic?
Listen now on BBC Sounds.